This is Chris Gasper.
I'm not the one who's red-faced and ranting, so who's the baby?
And Big Jim Murray.
Takes in your face, sports.
Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Hey, hour number two. Gasper and Murray here on 98.5, The Sports Hub. Coming to you from the, we'll call it the temporary Town Fair Tire Studio here in the soon-to-be torn-down building here in Dorchester, of which I hope I am part of, that I get to watch and celebrate and clap and cheer as I watch this building turned into dust. I said weeks ago, Chris, that the station should hold a raffle where we get to pay $10 each ticket, where we get to vie to be the one to press the button to blow the building up. I would buy two arm lengths.
Would you?
At $10 a ticket? Yeah. Oh, I would.
What are those things you can do, like rage rooms or whatever, where you can just go in and like break stuff?
I think they have one in Worcester. Someone was telling me about this. Yeah, they're rage rooms.
Rage rooms, right?
You put on like some protective clothing. You put on some protective eyewear.
Yeah.
They give you a bat, hammer, whatever weapon of choice, and you get to just smash stuff.
Yeah.
It's like living out Limp Bizkit break stuff.
I would love to do that here.
And so
like you watch any of these home renovation shows, and I feel like the most cathartic part is the demo.
Oh, without question. Oh, yes. Oh, no.
I'd love to be part of the demo.
I never thought I would work in a grosser building than 25 Exchange Street, Lynn, Mass.
Oh, yeah,
the
yeah.
former My home hometown. Of 1017 WFNX.
You had a lot of visitors parked outside that place, huh?
Yeah, once found a dead body in there, too.
I know, yeah.
But this, no,
not,
this...
Not that unusual,
this,
man.
This place takes the cake. It is... I mean, the term I want to use is not FCC compliant unless it's after 10 p.m. Safe harbor, they call it. This place stinks. I can't wait to not ever be here again. So a place where Tom Brady didn't want to be anymore in 2019, also here, had it with Bill Belichick and the Patriots crap. And now it turns out he was playing footsie with the Miami Dolphins. Some, including ardent Brady supporter Tommy Curran of NBC Sports Boston, feel like this is a stain on Tom Brady, hurts his legacy a little bit. I know your colleague of the Boston Globe, Ben Volen, thinks that it's a bad look for Brady, and he helped, he was a detriment ultimately to the Patriots in the 2019 season. I feel like it's gone a little too far. Now, granted, you and I, card-carrying Brady Bobos, so we might be a little bit biased, but to say that he was, like, costing them games in 2019... That's just crazy, Chris. Was the mentality there? Was he completely dialed in? Nope. But was he the one not covering Devontae Parker in that final game against the Miami Dolphins where they ended up blowing the two seed? Did he leave Mike Gesicki open for that go-ahead touchdown for Ryan Fitzpatrick in that game? No. So I just think it's gone a little bit too far. Are people that are pissed? I suppose I get it. I think you're a bunch of babies. And it makes me feel like something I feel more strongly about by the day, and that's that this area truly didn't even deserve this guy in the first place, if that's how some of you people feel. Seriously, really. Like, if that's how you feel after all the success and the six titles, and that he turned this place upside down after the suck 90s and my whole life of this place being Loserville, then you people are a-holes, and you didn't deserve him in the first place. But that's just my feelings on it. But ultimately, sure, should he have been doing it? No. Can you blame him, though?
No, I mean, look, it is a bad look. I can't condone the tampering, but what angered me was it suddenly became like, oh, okay, now Bill Belichick and the Patriots are absolved from all guilt of Brady's departure.
Yeah.
No matter what they did, he was always going to leave. You know, we had one foot out the door. It's like, hold on a second. He still talked to the team at the end, was willing to stay after that terrible season and the terrible weapons he had, where Philip Dorsett was the third leading receiver on the team with 29 catches. I mean, what a joke in terms of what they gave him. And he still was willing to talk to them about coming back. And Belichick, it was sort of more the same. It was, if you listen to, you know, certain people like Curran, it was Curran has put out there basically numbers to it. Hey, we can only pay you this much. We can't give you the 2 for $25. And Brady looked at it, and this part I do know, Brady basically looked at it like, this guy's still talking like I'm under contract and we're trying to do a renegotiation. I'm a free agent. There's like competition here. And Bill was still like, no, you know, we think you'll just come back. And here's the other part of this. If it's all true and Brady had one foot out the door and he was like tanking games, like his name was Stephen Ross and he wasn't really involved, wouldn't Belichick have noticed that? Shouldn't he immediately have had some sort of succession plan in place
for
quarterback?
Yeah.
You would think so. In fact, wouldn't Bill have been in the position to be like, man, I don't even want to bring this guy back instead of talking to him?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
No, they weren't proactive about that. If they knew that, then they should have had a succession plan.
Yeah.
And a real plan. They didn't.
So if Bill thought he was that disconnected, the whole year and really hurting the team, then don't you think he would have been more prepared and would have not even taken the conversation, taken the meeting with Brady? So I think it's become, while it's a bad look for Tom, I think people have used it basically to absolve the Patriots and take out a lot of their frustration over the situation in a way that is disproportionate to what really happened and saps all the context from what really happened in terms of the deterioration of the Brady-Patriots relationship, which was, from 2016 on, this guy was trying to get a commitment, saying, let me finish my career here, I can do this, I can play. And from 2016 on, he was getting the stiff arm from Belichick every year.
Yeah, and this, now that this has come to light, I just feel, I feel so justified in a couple of things that I felt at that time. One being, and I know as a show on Felger and Mazz, we felt this way, that it was so insulting, that contract that they gave him. I mean, look, shame on Tom for even signing the thing in the first place. But after the 2017 MVP season, where he's thrown for over 500 yards in that unfortunate Super Bowl loss to the Eagles, the following year, your contract is $15 million base and then $5 million in incentives. Yeah, we'll see if you can reach these incentives, the greatest quarterback of all time. That, what a kick in the crotch that thing was. These dangling carrot incentives you put in front of that guy. It's just insulting. Granted, he signed it, so shame on him, but still. And then the other thing is my attitude towards that 2019 season. 8-0, you're still crapping on him? This is all fake. The boogeymen are fake. Brady's miserable. This thing is like a Bataan death march. That season, despite the 12-4, was garbage. And at that time, I took so much flack for that. And who was right? Me. Yeah, that thing was, oh, God. That awful season. And why? Because he was miserable. The divorce was, you know, we were watching it in real time. He didn't want to be there. It was over. Weapons weren't good enough. Defense fake. They got their just desserts there. Losing that game to the Dolphins, then losing at home in the wild card game against Tennessee. That's how it should have ended. So for people to sit here today and say, it's Brady that cost them that. He cost them the 2 seed. That team was stacked. They had another Super Bowl run in them. No, they didn't. They got what they deserved that year. Tommy and Lynn on the Patriots. Hi, pal. Tommy.
What's up, Murray? What's up,
Jasper? Hey, Tommy, what's
Murray.
Up?
All right, this is what I got to say about the Patriots. It seems like practices the past few weeks, the offense is kind of the big main concern right now because they have no offensive coordinator, and it's a bad look after McDaniels leaves. They don't have anything in replace. They can't do nothing at practices. And once Tom Brady left, too, the offense was struggling, too. When they signed Cam Newton in 2020, bad season. Last year, you took a hit. You got Mac Jones. You went into the playoffs. You got waxed. What are you doing in your second year with the kid? Definitely in the third year in the rebuilding year, kind of, because it seems like they're in the rebuilding year. I want to hear your guys' opinion. I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be a rebuilding year. It should be a build-upon year.
Right.
They made the playoffs last year. People forget that. I mean, that was an accomplishment. And I know it was bad down the stretch, right? You look at losing 4 of the last 5 games, including the playoff game, and the only team you beat was the woeful Jacksonville Jaguars. So there was a mirage element to what happened. But still, that was a significant accomplishment, especially with the rookie quarterback. You're back in the playoffs. A lot of these teams lose their franchise quarterback, Jim, and they're abysmal for years. The Patriots, one down year, back in the playoffs. So you should be building on that. And to feel like you're either stuck in neutral or taking a step backwards with your young quarterback, again, I'll use the term I used before, it is disconcerting. That should not be happening. That should absolutely not be happening. You should be advancing. And my whole take on the Patriots to start training camp was, I think they'll be better this year. They could be better and still end up with the same record or slightly worse because the schedule is harder. But I can live with that if I see that they're better. I can live with that if they win a game where the other team scores 25 points or more, which they couldn't do last year. What I can't live with is watching Mac Jones and the offense go backward or be stagnant or be completely ineffectual for a large chunk of the season. I can't live with that.
And I know that, you know, like the Felger is one is like, why can't I have both? And I get this, but I think people should be okay with if this season they ended up missing the playoffs, but Mac Jones ends up looking like Justin Herbert, and you're like, holy crap, like they really have the guy. I think that that's okay. Like that's, if you see real growth offensively and with your quarterback, but because of them, the schedule has to be a factor here too. And the AFC, by the way, is the stronger conference. So if they missed it by like a game, but Mac Jones looked like, holy crap, legit, I think that's an okay thing.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. I would totally agree with that. The AFC's gotten deeper this year. I still think some stuff defensively is a work in progress. Again, you haven't gotten him a Ja'Marr Chase-like weapon. I do like the Devontae Parker move. I think that's going to work out better for them than a lot of people think, especially a lot of the Dolphins fans who have sort of dismissed him because they have better options now, which, you know, I get that, but that doesn't mean the guy can't play at all. I think that will work out for them, but they're still or should still be in the building phase here, and I'm okay with that. You just want to see progress. My whole thing on last year was, last year I looked at, it's a success if they are able to be in a position to lock down the quarterback position. You know, I don't care if they go 6-10, if they find their quarterback of the future, that's a success. Well, they didn't go 6-10. They went 10-7, made the playoffs, and found a viable quarterback to move forward with.
Yeah, and I just, it'll forever blow my mind. I know that OCs leave for head coaching jobs, so there's some things that are beyond people's control, but I'm a big believer, Chris, in like what helps a quarterback, a young quarterback, is comfort and continuity.
Yeah.
And for there to be upheaval in a quarterback's second year, it's just like, well, new OC, we're changing the offense. I just, whether it's Mac Jones here or throughout the league, it will forever blow my mind that that continues to happen. Comfort, continuity, that's what you want for your own quarterback, especially if you've drafted him high. And out of the top, just looking at it this year, out of the top nine quarterbacks selected last year, Zach Wilson's the only one that's going to begin year two with the same head coach and offensive coordinator tandem as he did in year one. Now, Kyle Trask is part of that, too, so like, let's take him out of it, but Justin Fields, new head coach, new OC. Trey Lance, same head coach, but no offensive coordinator.
Got it.
Trevor Lawrence, new head coach, new OC. Mac Jones, obviously same head coach, but, you know, who the hell's the offensive coordinator? It's these two dopes. Davis Mills, new head coach, new OC. Like, comfort, continuity. You want to see growth with your quarterback? Keep things the same.
Yeah, and one of the real advantages the Patriots have had over the last two decades plus has been continuity, right? The fact that Belichick's the coach, the fact they have this system, the fact that there is continuity with the culture, that's been one of their advantages over other clubs, and I'm just surprised that they're so cavalierly sort of chucking that aside offensively. And the only thing I can come up with on it is that they know they have so many new pieces, both in terms of players, guys they didn't get enough out of last year, Nelson Agholor and Jonnu Smith, that they're paying a lot of money to, that they need to contribute. And in terms of coaches with Patricia and Judge, that just can't hack it in the old system, that they have to switch it up.
617-779-0985, the phone number if you want to join us here on Gasper and Murray. We'll be kind of all over the place today because, hey, it's the summertime, and Chris and I haven't worked with each other in a while. So, you know, it'll be a hodgepodge of topics throughout the afternoon as we're here until 2. You want to join us again, 617-779-0985. Your calls next.
Chris Gasper, Big Jim Murray, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Chris Gasper and Big Jim Murray.
Give me fuel, give me fire. Give me that which I desire.
It's Gasper and Murray, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Well, that was fast. Not a lot of the old inventory in the commercial breaks during the summer weekend shifts.
Doesn't seem like it.
What if I needed to go pee? Tough.
Yeah, forget about it. We'd have to do the old, like, Al Michaels. You got to get the bottle. You have a large water bottle there that you could convert.
Yeah.
In a pinch.
You know, in all of my years, in all the time I've been in cars for too long, traveled, I've never done the have to pee in the bottle thing. Like, I mean, I've had to go, but I'll just, like, you know,
I've come close on a plane.
Say, hey, you know, pull over. I'll just go in the woods, something like that. But I've never had to, like, try to maneuver it inside a bottle, which I would assume would be a complete disaster, and it goes everywhere, and it's all over the car, and then you got to sell the car. It is Gasper Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Many of you hanging. Most Patriots, most are Patriots-related calls. So to you we go. You want to join us, 617-779-0985. Michelle in South Carolina on the Patriots. Hello.
Hey, guys. Welcome back together again. Sounds good.
Hey, thank you very much, Michelle.
So question first, did they completely get rid of, their game plan and go completely to the Shanahan plan.
Well, we don't really know yet. I mean, there seems that way based on those that have been down there covering what the practices have looked like.
It seems like they're not ready for it. I don't know if they will be ready for it because preseason's not that long. And I'm curious because I haven't seen or heard that they've done any red zone plays in pads yet. And I'm wondering why not. And Mac Jones looks a little iffy in pads in his decision making, like he's padding the ball a lot, and he seems a little indecisive. And I know a big talk is about the defense, so I'm concerned a little about our offense and who's gonna be his go-to wide receiver. So I'm going to hang up and let you guys answer me.
Well, Michelle, it seems like, again, you got to take all of this, including the negative stuff, let's be fair here, from practice in the preseason with a grain of salt. But it does seem to me, correct me if I'm wrong, Nelson Agholor has looked better in some of these practices, Chris. You know, they go and get Devontae Parker. You know, it seems like he would maybe be their de facto number one. But I'm reading here some tweets from Warren Sharp at Sharp Football. That he's put out here in the last hour or so, and this is blue check mark, Warren Sharp, who was a predictive NFL analytics and visualized data at Sharp Football Analysis.
He's very good.
Yeah, he is good.
Very good.
And so he is basing these tweets off some of Mike Giardi's comments after last night's scrimmage at Gillette Stadium, where he said, you know, Mac Jones had some moments of uncertainty a year ago in training camp, but not nearly as many as you would expect for a rookie. This summer, far more. Yes, it's early August. There's time. However, the install started back in the spring, and you would like more comfort and success. To clarify, this isn't all on Mac. Blocking has been poor. And last night, there were a number of times Mac had to hold because receivers weren't open. Not a wonderful combination. Well, again, we keep hearing about the speed, right? The speed of Devontae Parker. Warren Sharp follows up these comments made by Mike Giardi and says, Mac had to hold the ball because receivers weren't open. Quote sums it up perfectly. Big addition to the wide receiver room was Devontae Parker. Ranking Parker's separation by year. Again, this is one of the nerds. Statistical analytics here from Warren Sharp. Last year, ranking Parker by separation out of 127 wide receivers ranked. Where do you think Parker was?
Ooh, in separation?
Yeah.
I'm going to say he was near the bottom. I'll say 126.
127, dead
Ooh,
last.
He's at the bottom.
The year before, out of 132 ranked wide receivers. 132.
Ooh.
2019, a little bit better. Out of 125 wide receivers ranked, he was 123. But he finishes this analysis by saying, no receiver gets less separation than Devontae Parker in these last three
seasons.
But
he's a contested catch guy. I mean, we sort of knew that coming in. Like, he's supposed to be kind of what N'Keal Harry was billed as, which is a contested catch guy. So those numbers are not great, obviously, but if he's big and knows how to use his body, he's not going to create a ton of separation. But Mac's accurate, and if he goes up and gets the ball, I'll live with it. It's the other guys I'm worried about in terms of, okay, what kind of separation are we going to get from Jacoby Myers this year or Nelson Agholor? Or, you know, Kendrick Bourne, I thought, had a really good year this year. But what about Jonnu Smith? Hunter Henry had a great year, but is he going to be the same as he was last year? If you make your quarterback in a new system have to fit every ball into a tiny window, that's just so much stress on the quarterback. And it's one thing to do it with a multiple-time MVP, multiple-time Super Bowl-winning quarterback, which they did with Brady at the end in 18 and 19, and it took its toll on him. It's another thing to do it with a second-year quarterback. That's a really big ask. And how many times have I said to you that I feel like they basically have gone back to their plan, and I know they're changing the offense, but it's essentially, well, the quarterback's really good, and based on our coaching and what we do, the quarterback will make everybody better. So swap out Tom Brady, swap in Mac Jones, and away we go. We're good.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not fair. That's not fair to anyone. It's particularly not fair to Mac Jones.
Nobody hates bike lanes like this guy, like my guy Mike in Woburn. Hey, Mike.
How are you? Too hot to bike today. Where are all the bikes?
Yeah. Shocker. Oh, yeah, no, they don't use them in the winter, and they can't use them on days like this. Too hot. But we need more of them, Mike.
We right, and we need more of our roads dedicated to their hobby. Get the F out of here. Seriously. stay in your freaking Nordic track bike, whatever, in the living room. Don't inconvenience other people. So, first of all, I don't know why everybody's up in arms about the Brady thing. Like, I think everybody here knew he was on the outs for how many years now? Basically, since they since they drafted Garoppolo. Like, it was questioned around here what his future was going to be, right? I mean, don't you expect people to go sniffing around to see what Brady, you know, especially when the team gives him an out with his contract? They're saying, like, okay, we're not going to franchise you. You're going to be a free agent. I expect other teams to go. It's like when your parents have a divorce, you find out mom was cheating with the milkman. Of course, there was something going on. Sample is half and half. We get it. But the tanking thing drives me crazy. Like, do they just completely have a memory wipe and forget the fact that the Colts committed the most obvious and dedicated tanking, campaign in the history of football?
Yeah, in 2011.
Andrew Luck. You know, they didn't need emails from the owner to figure out what was going on there. Like, the whole discipline thing since Roger Goodell, and Chris, you said it, we punish this for this. It's not like they're punishing people for what the actual crime is. It's like there's some de facto punishment that they're subsidizing the current punishment for because we didn't get this right 7 years ago or whatever. Roger Goodell's discipline style, I mean, I would have loved to see how Tagliabue or Roselle would have handled this, because I think he would have absolutely dropped an A-bomb on Miami after the tanking thing, because honestly, the tampering thing happened. It happened in Miami. It happened in Miami with Shula going from Baltimore to Miami, and they gave a pick to Baltimore. Like, that's something that has happened before. But the league acting like, A, the tanking doesn't exist, and B, it doesn't happen every time some team is bad and there's a generational player available in a non-lottery draft, is just insulting to fans. We know it happens.
Yeah, and Mike, that's right. Now, the Colts are a good example. That 2011 year, that was egregious, throwing out Curtis Painter.
But that's
right?
The thing. Like, so they just kept playing a guy who was bad, which is different from, like, hey, that's slightly different. Like, they did it the artful way, which is a weird thing to say about Jim Irsay. But they did it the artful way, which is, we're just going to keep throwing out this quarterback who's bad.
My artistic qualities come out when I'm all hopped up on Percocet. He's playing the new one from the Stones on this guitar that was owned by Keith Richards. Crushed up those perks on it, and then I strummed, and then the idea came to me. We'll do it in an artful manner, and we'll get Andrew Luck.
They got their just desserts on that, too. He ended up retiring early.
They did, because they couldn't protect him.
Yeah, right. That was egregious. No, it's true. And it's on the punishment stuff, this just reminded me, with everything surrounding Deshaun Watson, the Judge Robinson, she came down with a 6-game suspension. The league, I think kind of rightfully in this one, were like, yeah, no, we can't have this. It's a black mark in the league that this guy would only get 6 games. How does this ultimately end up playing out?
NFL ambush.
Well, this one, Chris, you're well-versed on this kind of crap. You can think on your feet. Come on. Does he end up suing the league? Does he still end up playing? I don't know. So this is what I'm asking out loud.
Yeah.
It feels to me like where this is going to go is they want the full year suspension. They want him to get treatment, all this. But the full year suspension or indefinite, right? So he said if that happens, he's going to sue. If he sues, in the interim, can he play? Or because he already accepted the 6-game suspension, would he still have to serve the 6 games?
Oh, that's a great point. You know, I honestly don't. No. I mean, does the appeal by the NFL nullify the original penalty?
I can't find an answer to this.
Or does he just have to serve the original penalty until the appeal? My guess would be he probably has to serve the original penalty until the appeal,
I would think,
goes through. That is fascinating from the NFL standpoint. I think that ultimately, so from what I've read, at one point the offer to him was 12, and he was willing to accept as many as 8. So I'm guessing that this thing lands somewhere between 8 and 10 in terms of, you know, now having the former New Jersey Attorney General look at this and he has the final say. I don't think it will be the full season or indefinite because Watson's threatening to sue, but I think it will be more than 6 games. And the way it's written, and I know the NFLPA is saying they're going to sue, but they also agreed to a CBA that basically said the NFL can appeal, and if the NFL appeals, Goodell can delegate who the appeal officer is, and that the decision is then final for both sides. That's in the collective bargaining agreement. They agreed to that. So if the NFL exercises its lawful right to appeal the suspension and it goes from 6 to 10, I don't really see the legal grounds for Watson or the NFLPA.
See, you were able to do that. Yeah, NFL ambush. F you, Jim. I know what you were thinking, but well, you just, had you know, an
answer. It's kind of a naughty subject. It, yeah. It's like, and when I say naughty, I mean, you know, K-N-O-T-T-Y.
Yeah, not
like
it's, N-A-U-G-H-T-Y, yeah, yeah, just, where he's in Happy Baby and said, hey, go to try to find the keys, won't you, massage therapist? If that's the one that you read about that, like, wow, that one's wild.
I know. So it's not, you know, you just don't want, I don't want to get Felgert here talking about Deshaun Watson, I guess is my concern.
I got you.
Enough things have gone wrong for me today with this show that I just don't want to Felgert myself. I just want to survive this show, Jim.
Well, we got an hour and a half to go. Let's see if we can survive with you, the people, at 617-779-0985. Back after this here on Gasper and Murray.
That's an aberration, which I freely admit.
It's Gasper and Murray.
I'm drunk, you're gross, let's go.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is 98.5. Up.
Sounds like fact, not opinion to me.
This is Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. We're back here. I was all tripped up. I was talking to B-Rob down the line. See, part of, I mean, I know you people don't care, but it's in my nature. I got a bitch. we're in this temporary studio. Typically, you get to look at the producer. You have eye contact. You know, our guy B-Rob. I haven't seen him in weeks. I'm not working.
Miss you guys. Miss you guys down here.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, we miss you,
and
B-Rob.
You're in a completely separate part of the building here. We're I can't see you. And I was about to do, I was like, isn't it time for the sponsorship read at the end of the hour? He's like, don't you have a clock in there? No, we don't have a clock in here.
There's that clock.
There's this one over here.
Yeah.
Inconveniently back and to the right.
And manual.
Yeah. But hey, we're hammering through.
B-Rob had to show me where the studio was.
Oh, right, because you had never even been
here.
No,
I'd never been here. Yeah, you had to show me where this, I didn't, I walk right past it.
Look, I get it. Believe me, I do. Very lucky. It's not like we're putting up drywall and
100
degree heat for a living.
But I should put you on a scavenger hunt, Casper.
This is easy. They should.
Find it.
They should, yeah.
But, boy, it's been a lot of inconvenience over the last month.
Let me ask you this, because you're over at, in Needham.
Oh, what a joy that building is.
I was going to say, how is that?
Oh, Chris.
How is it over there?
You've been in there. Oh, my God.
But not to broadcast for radio, just for TV.
No, it's actually been the balls. It sounds good. We're in a dedicated podcast studio that they have. They have all the acoustic padding in there.
It looks great on TV.
Does it? Because some people have said it looks like we're in a trailer. That it's like gray and drab. I think the lighting's okay. It's great. In that building, I mean, they have a real calf.
They do.
There's actual humans in the building. There's buzz. It feels like it's happening.
Yeah.
There's not used needles in the parking lot. Oh, it's everything you want it to be. Again, like Mac Jones and young quarterbacks, comfort, continuity. Broadcaster, just looking for comfort and continuity. Not pulling up used heroin needles in the parking lot. What studio do I go to? Do we have a clock? Why are the commercial breaks 90 seconds long? I don't know. Like, you know, continuity, comfort. That's all I'm looking for. We'll get there. I know. I just needed a vent because I don't know what time it is because there's really no clock to look at in the effing studio.
Well, I bet you there are so many of our listeners right now driving around being like, if you don't want to know what time it is, Jim, just look at your phone.
Oh, that's right. Yep. Yeah. Wouldn't that be poetic justice for
why? Just like the scores.
When you want updated scores, just look at your phone.
Yeah, just look at your phone. If you want to know what time it is, just look at your phone.
Okay. Well, let's get to more of your calls, shall we? 617-779-0985. Call screener here. There's someone on line two. Is the name in? No. Mystery caller. You're next here on Gasper Murray. Hello, mystery caller.
Yeah, hi. The first game of the year between the Patriots and the Dolphins is going to be fascinating. And I'm embarrassed to admit I'm a Dolphins fan. They stink. It's a dumpster fire. But they're going through the same exact transition on offense that the Patriots are, including moving to a Shanahan's own running scheme. The difference is they brought in a head coach that knows how to coach it. He was the run game coordinator for the 49ers. They bought in a bunch of offensive staff that know how to run it. Their QB coach is frankly more experienced than anyone on the Patriots offensive staff. They brought in two offensive linemen that know how to run it, and they brought running backs in that know how to run it. So stylistically or conceptually, very different approach to the transition than what the Patriots have taken. And apparently in training camp, it's smooth as butter. It's looking better than it ever has, probably since Dan Marino has been there.
Really?
And that's with Tua,
wow,
whose strength certainly is not his football IQ. So I think week one is going to be an interesting litmus test for the approaches, not necessarily who wins, because sometimes there's talent issues, but just look at what happens on the field and which offensive lines and which offenses look like they're in sync and know what they're doing, and look who's not. But I can tell you in Miami, and maybe you should get a Miami beat reporter on the phone, it's like from all the reports out of training camp, it looks great.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a very quarterback-friendly offense. That's why a lot of teams have adapted it and used it. And I know that Aaron Rodgers, who's won back-to-back MVPs with it, he was initially resistant. He was like, hey, you know,
it's run-centric
and too robotic, and I don't get to change these plays, and shouldn't we use my institutional knowledge? But he's been great in it. So it got Jared Goff to a Super Bowl. Enough said. It's supposed to help the quarterbacks. You can understand why the Patriots wanted to go to it, but to your point, if you're going to switch this offense, then I think you have to bring in somebody who's expert in it. And even if that person's not the offensive coordinator, I just don't understand why they, you know, maybe instead of Joe Judge being the de facto quarterbacks coach, why don't you let him coach special teams and bring in somebody from the Shanahan tree, McVay tree, to coach the quarterback, essentially, and help him learn this system. And Patricia can still be the play caller. He can still be the guy running the offense. But at least you have this other person here with this expertise in this offense to help both the coaches and the quarterback install it.
Zach in the car on the Patriots next year on Gaspar Murray. Hello, Zach.
So the issue 2 years ago was we didn't have a quarterback plan. We didn't have we were old. Now the whole roster is getting younger. The quarterback seems to be figured out now. And it's just going to be a transition year, which we're still going to be in it this year, it seems like. Plus, have about $60 million in cap for this coming offseason. So Bill's got us headed in the right direction. Is that wrong?
Yeah, I think overall, yeah, they should be headed in the right direction, assuming they don't sabotage Mac and sabotage the offense with this install. I mean, I said that earlier in the show that a lot of these teams that lose their franchise quarterback are down for years. They're terrible for years. The Patriots missed the playoffs 1 year and we're back in. And last year, my litmus test for them is, did you identify a quarterback you can win with moving forward? They absolutely did. So when you look at it from that standpoint, they're in a pretty good position. They started in a pretty good position. But you want to see them continue on an upward arc at this point. And at least based on training camp, which I know is not much, but it's what we have to go on so far, there are some, you know, flashing red lights that have you a little bit concerned about where they're headed offensively.
I forget because, you know, the show has been wildly inconsistent here for the last month and a half, and we haven't worked much. What did you make of what I felt like was gushing from Bill Belichick on that one of those first press conferences that he did down at camp talking about Mac Jones?
I thought they're trying to make him feel like it's his team. He has ownership of the team, and they know that what they have to sell to the locker room, to ownership, to the fan base is Mac Jones. Mac Jones is the reason for hope. Mac Jones is the reason you think you can compete for Super Bowls again. I thought that was sort of a public sell job from Belichick.
Steve in Taunton with an interesting one here. It says Sports Hub move. I'll gladly take this call. Hello, Steve.
Hey, how's it going? The new building there in Waltham you guys are moving into, it's awesome.
Is it?
They have an awesome cat early. It's actually a really nice building.
Well, it's good to know, Steve, and I randomly
what's the address? I don't even know.
I don't even know either. I just know that it's kind of near where, like, the Clark's building is that Jake and Joe's. There's stuff around it. There's life. There's options for restaurants.
Okay.
There's no heroin needles in the parking lot, from what I understand. I randomly bumped into, I think, the guy who's, like, the building manager yesterday at Newton Commonwealth. Dump of a place, by the way. I'll never play golf there again. But be that as it may. I I mean,
this
like
is just an airing of grievances like any other.
I mean, 3 hours for nine holes. I mean, what are we doing here? I get that these public courses are going to be a little bit more busy, but occasionally I've been lucky enough to get an invite to a private place like Maz's Country Club.
Oh, wow.
Charter Oak. And you know what you're ultimately paying for? No people. Oh, it's like a dare to dream. One of these days, Chris, if I can afford like a real hoity-toity country club, it's not so much about the golf and it being in nice condition. It's about that there's no one else there.
You got to get that ringer job.
Oh, yeah. So apparently they're starting a ringer Boston, by the way. Like I'm sure that'll be very successful. Where was I?
Oh, you're complaining about you ran into the
building. Oh, no, yeah, and he's a nice guy. He said, can't wait till you guys move in. Oh, it's going to be great, and there's going to be a calf, Chris. You know there's going to be a gym?
A gym?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
We're going to get to have a gym that we can take advantage of if the traffic's too bad. A calf? Options for real food? Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait. Just needs to hurry up. We need to speed up the process.
I'm going to have to do a dry run on the commute, though.
I thought, too, that, well, that'd be a better commute for you, right, from where you are?
I don't know. It depends. Nothing's really convenient from Jamaica Plain.
That's true. I thought I was ready to celebrate, too, because I thought this was going to be the last time I was ever going to be in this building. But I was reminded by Joe Murray, who was on before us.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I'll see you Thursday. And I was like, huh? I was like, oh, right, for postgame. Oh, right, we're going to have to do it here. Ah, son of a bitch.
Postgame, that's right. And I'm back on pregame, looking forward to it. I'm excited. We're close to... funny, preseason football is always the same thing. You get so excited for a game, and then you're like, oh, I forgot this is preseason football.
It's funny. That first game, the Raiders-Jacksonville game on Thursday night, I was like, yeah, football's back. After 5 minutes, I was like, oh, God, I can't. I'll watch the stupid Red Sox instead. How about that? And that actually ended up being wildly entertaining with that seventh inning that they had.
Entertaining of late. We should probably segue to them. I have some thoughts.
Let's do that. You know what? Yeah, because they've had an up-and-down week, mostly down, I think, especially as it pertains to the trading deadline. We're going to get better. Let's trade away our catcher, who might be one of our best players. Let's celebrate it and say we're still going for it and we're still in the playoff hunt. Okay. We'll touch on your Boston Red Sox next in our long commercial-free segment. You want to join us on that? 617-779-0985.
This is Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is Chris Gasper.
I'm not the one who's red-faced and ranting, so who's the baby?
And Big Jim Murray.
Takes in your face, sports.
Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
And a pop-up into center field, that should do it. Duran underneath, and the Red Sox win it by a final score of 7-4.
Yeah, good ball game there. Offensive out, then good pitching until that, you know, eighth inning. But great job by John Schreiber to close that thing out.
Red Sox back to .500.
All right, Red Sox defeat the Royals last night, 7-4 at Kauffman Stadium. They're back at .500, and there's still a path. 3.5 games back of the final fake wild card spot. And I will always refer to it as such. It's Gasper Murray at 98.5, the Sports Hub. I know this is what it is now. And some people, Mike, would argue that more inventory is better for talking points and sports. I just think it's starting to water things down. More is not always better. And I'm a firm believer, Chris, that... And I know over the last 15 years or so, it's like who's hot at the right time has ultimately won the World Series, one of those, or maybe a couple of those Giants championships, Washington Nationals, Atlanta Braves, maybe want to make a case for them, but they were a division winner last year, made four bold trades at the trade deadline, gave away real prospects. I just, like, yeah, it's who's hot at the right time, but those teams are ultimately really good if you go back and look at some of those rosters and, you know, that Giants team, what was that, 2014 or whatever it was, with Madison Bumgarner, who was, like, playing out of his mind.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so there is some, like, asterisks you can put on that. But this third wild card, I am a firm believer, that team will never win the World Series. It's so stacked against them that you have these road games.
Yep.
And it just feels like I'm with you and Dan Shaughnessy on this. It's this illusion of contention. It's just this dangling carrot of hope for fans that still really give a damn. Like, we could still make the playoffs as the third wild card, and you're going to get waxed. Like, okay, you might win a game, but you're not winning that series. Even if you do, you're not winning the World Series.
You're not winning the World Series. And that's ultimately my issue with the Red Sox right now, is I feel like, okay, what are we trying to accomplish? Are we trying to build a World Series winner? John Henry says, okay, we're still in the building phase. Fine, I accept that. You're trying to build something that's sustainable, that can contend for championships. Okay, let's do that. That means you got to sell off when you have a team that's not contending. That's what you have to do, to sell off, to try and put yourself in a better position to win a championship, not sort of cling to the life preserver of backing into the playoffs as the third wild card if the teams in front of you, some of whom sold, like the Orioles, fall off. What does that really mean? Do you just want the postseason participation ribbon, or do you want to win another championship? Because it seems like you just want the postseason participation ribbon.
Yeah, they are a franchise that is about half measures. And I thought that how they handled the trade deadline, I was like, well, you know, I think you were with me over the last couple of weeks. Like, sell, sell. Like, if you're going to be doing this, and I really want to see Heim Bloom and these methods put to the test, too. Because I actually said this to a guy last night who listens to the station with regularity. He said hello. My wife and I were at Bancroft having dinner, and he was like, what's going on with the Sox? I was like, you know what? I've had this epiphany with them, Chris. To me, they're the Red Sox in name only now. Like, they want this to be this Rays-type model, the way that they're running it. I don't know how you can think any other way. And yes, that has some success, but that's it. Just some success. There's a ceiling. That method has never accomplished anything in terms of winning a world championship.
Yeah,
it's about being
two World Series and lost them both.
It's about sustainability and contending, but not really going for it. And I don't think they're really going to be going for it as long as they have this guy as their chief baseball officer. So that's it. You go, like, this is the new reality. They're the Red Sox in name only. It's not, they're a big market team. You're the Red Sox. You should be spending money. Those days are gone. Those days are gone, and this trade deadline proved it to me and cemented that theory even further. Because if you were going for it, you wouldn't have traded away Christian Vasquez. You would have truly added to your bullpen and added another arm to the rotation. And instead, it was more half measures. You trade away Vasquez, which I think was a detriment to your clubhouse in terms of the feeling and mentality, something that the nerds don't consider because, you know, those are human emotions.
Oh, you can't quantify that.
Yeah, right. That's not ones and zeros. And then you bring in Eric Hosmer, which this is, I can't, how much credit am I supposed to give them when it fell into their lap?
100% fell into their lap. Yes.
That wasn't a plan.
No.
He nixed the trade going back to Washington from Juan Soto. So he's available and they're like, ooh, we'll pounce. Hey, credit to you there for pouncing. But you needed a real first baseman 2 years ago.
And San Diego needed to get him off the 40-man roster to create room
right.
for Bell. And,
yeah.
I mean, that's really what it was about. Like, once he wouldn't go to the Nationals, and that's why San Diego took all the money. Like, for them, it wasn't about cost savings or luxury tax. It's like, okay, we're doing the math here, the 40-man roster. Like, we need this 40-man roster spot to get Soto and Bell on the 40-man roster. So he literally fell into your lap. So I agree with you completely. I would say this. There is a blueprint for doing this the right way, and it's the Los Angeles Dodgers. And I know they've only won one World Series, but they're in it perennially. They go for it when they need to. They'll bring in a Manny Machado. You know, last year they brought in, Trey Turner. They made that deal. They will go for it, and they brought in Scherzer as part of that deal. They will go for it and use their prospects when they need to. They also will use their financial might to boost the team to, I don't know, re-sign their own guys like Mookie Betts to a $365 million deal. It's not that complicated to meld the two worlds of the Rays and a big market team. The Dodgers are doing it. I would like to see more of that. And maybe we will with Heim Bloom, who I actually like and think is intelligent, when it's his team, when he feels like he's invested because it's his guys. I don't think he feels like he's invested at this point. But you know what my concern about him is, Jim? My concern is that he's using his intelligence to mask indecision and indecisiveness. He's basically telling us, oh, you mere mortals, like, you don't understand. Like, you think there's a box here. You think there's a binary, buy or sell. But those of us who are educated and erudite and really get it, you don't have to choose either. There is no box. And it's like, no, buddy, there's a box. I don't care how smart you are. You just can't decide. You just can't decide, and you're indecisive. And to me, there's nothing worse. If I'm going to have a general manager, I'd rather you be wrong all the way than go halfway in on something you don't believe in. And I feel like that's what he did. I don't think he really believes in this team. I think he wanted to sell off everybody, but he was like, well, you know, maybe we can make this wild card, and like that buys me time, and ownership will like it if we make this wild card, and well, the fans will like it if we make this wild card, and the players will like me if we make this wild card. So I'm not like, I thought it was ridiculous that they came out and said they weren't going to trade Bogarts.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. He wanted, like, J.D. Martinez. Like, those rumors yes. for weeks were hot, heavy. Like, J.D. Martinez, it felt like
yeah.
he got on that plane and knew, like, I probably am not going to be yeah. going back to Boston.
Yeah.
And instead he stays. Like, that to me reeked of, oh, he got shook. Like, he didn't really
yeah,
know what to do
I like the way you put that.
He did. Like, he Bloom shook. Was like, no, we'll just keep him instead. So it's just, it's the indecisiveness, too. It's like, it is. I think there's real tells there. And then it ends up being Vasquez, and then you kind of, it feels like fracture or at least separate the clubhouse and I think the manager and the connect, or whatever little connect there was between them and the front office. Like, that just fractured that even further.
Yeah, no, I think you're onto it. I love what you said in terms of he got shook. I think he wanted to do something which was burn it all down, which was the right thing to do. The Orioles were ahead of you. And I mean, on the day of the trade deadline, they were definitely in last place, and I believe they were 52-52 at that point. And the team ahead of you, the Orioles, is selling off pieces, and you just traded Vasquez, and they want you to believe, well, the only reason we did that was because the return was so great. You should have sold on Martinez. You should have sold on Eovaldi. I think you could have made a case for Bogarts. You know, Bogarts to me is the one where it depends on the return. If the return's crappy, then I'd rather you keep him for the rest of the year just because he's Xander Bogarts. But if the return's halfway decent, I think you sell him off too, because who's to say he wouldn't have pulled an Aroldis Chapman and re-signed with you? So you right. get the prospects and you get the player. So I just look at it, and I feel like he was grossly indecisive. He was hedging his bets in both directions.
Yeah, and I heard, I don't want to like steal this take, but I thought it was a great point from Jones and Arcan the other night. You know the other thing, too, which feels criminal, is they really blew it in terms of you had real buzz and, you know, good feelings from the fan base, and I think casuals surrounding the Red Sox for the first time in a long time. Remember, like this time last year, I think they were rightfully getting dumped on because they half-assed that trade deadline. Schwarber ended up working out for them. I guess Robles did for a time, but, you know, that ended up, he turned into the pumpkin like I thought he would. But this time last year, regular season, people were like, eh, whatever. I mean, the ratings showed that. But then they get into the playoffs, you beat the Yankees. That place was buzzing like it hadn't been buzzing since like 2013. I think, it, you know, 2018, obviously, they win the World Series and there's buzz, but that last year was different. It really was. And, you know, it was talked about rightfully because it's like, oh, it feels like old Fenway's back. They got real good vibes and buzz surrounding them for the first time in a long time. And instead of carrying that over into this season, they completely whiffed and blew it. And now it feels like it's like the bad mid-90s again. Like, even your hardcores, Tom and Quincy, who's one of our regular callers, who really, like, lives and dies with the Red Sox, you're starting to, like, alienate guys like that. That's a bad place for this team to be.
Yeah, it is a bad place for them to be. There's no question about that. And I think Red Sox fans a lot of times don't get the credit that they deserve for being smart enough to know what's going on. I think everybody always assumes it's like, well, if they don't spend a bunch of money and if the team's not great, you know, people are going to be mad and they're going to sell, you know, tickets and they're not going to be invested in the team. I think there's some of that, but I also feel like the fans are smart enough to see, like, okay, they're building something here. This is what the plan is. They're sort of all in on it. And here are pieces of this. You know, Rafael Devers is a piece of what we're building. I get it. We're a 500-ish team this year, but there's better days ahead. Instead, I feel like they try and fool them with stuff like this useless Pyrrhic third wild card into believing that they're really invested when they're not. I think the level of financial investment in this team this year is legit and it's high. They're going to go over the luxury tax. But I think the level of emotional investment from the front office in this team is low. Chaim Bloom wants to get this to his program with his players and winning his way.
Johnny in Brooklyn, we'll get to your call in a sec because I see you want to talk about the Red Sox and Chaim Bloom. So we'll do that after the headlines here with me. Just take a minute or so, and we'll get into the final hour of Gasper Murray. You want to join us as well, 617-779-0985. Your calls and more coming up next here in the final hour of the show here on 98.5 Sports Up.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
We were just talking about the Red Sox in this middling week for the front office. Johnny in Brooklyn, your thoughts on Heim Bloom. Go ahead, Johnny.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.